You should have given him the gold. He would have returned the abyss and left us to live in peace.
The peace of the dead. Fire at your potholes like an arrow from an elfin bowman. It is episode 61 of the movie mixtape. My name is Dirk, but I do not quest alone. Nay, she makes my head spin like two Dayglow hula hoops rotating on an axis. It is Marcy Dale. Marcy Dale, how doth you?
I'm excellent because I think that was a positive. Is that the first time you've introduced me in a positive? I don't know.
Well, you kicked off last time and said I never introduced you as the person who isn't the baddie or somebody who falls down and lands in some tripe or something. So I've changed my ways. You've made me a better person and I'm grateful for it. This is a new beginning right here on the movie mixtape.
Extending the olive branch. Thank you so much, Dirk. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Marcy, every single day. And just remember that introduction for next time. But rounding out the party, if he were a slave, I'd dress him in oversized underpants and fondle his biceps. It is Mikey P. Mikey
Dirk,
P.
Anytime you want to go on a quest with me, I will bring my giant big hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And join you.
Well, look, that's us, the table of three. How are you all doing? Welcome to the movie mixtape. Please come in, sit down. You'll be more comfortable. This is the start of a brand new mix. What is a mix? What is a mix? What is a mix, Marcy? Why don't you explain it?
So remember, like, when I was young and you'd make CDs with all the songs you like and give them to your friend? Or when you guys were young, it would be a cassette tape. So a mix. A mix is that. But what we do is we make a mix for each other, but with movies instead of songs. So we are starting a new mix right now.
Beautiful description, Marcy. So this is the start of a new start of our new mixtape, which is called Instant Mix, which is a play on words, Marcy tells me, because I'm not American. But it's something about cakes and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it has everything to do with cakes. Or, as on topic for us this week, pancakes. So,
Congratulations. Yes. Congratulations. Marcy, you are revealing personal DMs and the transatlantic confusion of what Pancake Day was. Do you have Pancake Day in America, Mikey?
I'm going to say if there's money to be made on anything, somebody is... come up with a campaign for Pancake Day. And Big Pancake wants us all to spend our money, our hard-earned money, on pancakes. Big Pancake running our lives over here.
You know, over here in the UK, we are gobsmacked that you all think Valentine's Day is a holiday. A holiday.
Thank you.
Valentine's Day. It's not a holiday, mate. All right? But as one, in unison, as an entire collective, the nation... on the day before Ash Wednesday, makes pancakes. And it is Shrove Tuesday, a.k.a. Pancake Day. Doesn't matter about your religion, your creed, everybody makes pancakes. And that's what we did. That's what we did this week.
What's a Shrove?
Mikey. Mikey, wait, I need to explain something to you. Are you sitting down? Okay. So these people over there in the UK, they don't use maple syrup. Do you want to know what they put on their pancakes?
Jelly.
Lemon juice and sugar.
Let me tell you something. That sounds delicious.
It's absolutely delicious.
It was artificial lemon juice, though. It wasn't like a real lemon. No.
Hold on.
Do
hold
you
on.
Use
I
a real lemon?
One video. Do I look like some kind of jabroni who is using artificial lemon?
I don't know. You're very busy. Maybe.
I squeeze. I squeeze a lemon. I cut a lemon in half, and then I squeeze the juice.
So all you squeeze it before cutting it? Is that?
No.
Well, you said no. I squeeze it, then you cut it. So
yeah, then
which
I corrected myself. Then
okay.
I corrected myself. And don't try and trip me up when you know I've got a fever and I'm not feeling very well. Okay, Marcy. But yeah, so we had the joy of Pancake Day. I say the joy. We got all the, you know, it's all about the paraphernalia. It's a bit like an American barbecue, isn't it? Where you've got your sauces and your condiments and all that sort of stuff. So we've got our lemon. We've got our sugar. We've got a bit of, for the kids, a little bit of marshmallows that we're going to put on there as well,
oh,
maybe. But then
that sounds good.
Had a faulty pan. Faulty pan that would not allow, because you've got to toss them, Mikey. Do you toss them over there?
I toss. I'm a tosser.
Good. Oh, if you don't toss the pancake, then it's basically just a normal day. It's a Tuesday. It's not pancake day. So you've got to like flip the pancake as high as you can in the air and catch it. It's like a Rite de Passage over here. But unfortunately, our pan had lost a bit of that non-stick. We all look like buffoons. And nobody in our street would talk to us for the rest of the evening. I think I was talking about what Instant Mix was, and then you went on about pancake thing.
But there is Instant Pancake Mix, so that's what I was getting at.
Okay. But, you know, we don't do it like that over here.
I know.
Because, you know, we're Britain, and we have real cheese, not just like... stuff that comes in plastic wallets. So we like to cook over here, and we're very close to France, and they definitely like to cook. So I made the batter myself.
Wow.
That's maybe why it didn't work, but we won't go into that in more detail right now. But
I would love some of your batter.
Oh, baby. I'm trying to do bit at the beginning that is required to inform people what this episode is going to be about.
Now it's just our dirtiest episode to do.
Instant mix, Marcy. What does instant mix mean?
I'm sorry. You don't need to laugh. I'm thinking inappropriate things.
Right. Hold on a second, you two. I'm just typing my resignation letter from this podcast.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So instant mix for this mix. It's a movie that within minutes of watching it, you just knew that you were gonna love it. So it's Dirk's pick.
Beautiful.
It's like, yeah,
it's a great topic, Marcy. Brilliant.
I did such
brilliant.
A great job.
But it was my pick for this episode, so later on we are going to be doing the Sword and Sorcery mega movie from the 1980 Hawk the Slayer. But that is all to come. How have the two of you been? It has literally been about 6 weeks since we have recorded for a variety of reasons. Mikey's been doing press-ups nonstop. I can see his chesticles are bursting out of his top. But how have you two been? How have you been?
I've been sitting on a funny story for a while now. And I thought I'd save it for the pod because I get yelled at to save things for the pod. So now it's probably not going to be funny because I've hyped it up too much.
Well, listen, I'm going to really be, I'm only going to laugh if it is definitely funny and not just out of politeness, because I'm not in a very good mood with you, Marcy, after you've just taken this podcast down a pothole. I didn't want it to go at the very beginning.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is just going to make it worse, I feel like. Also, this is actually very on topic for big news that just happened this week as well, but I'll just tell the story. And it's kind of a Kaya update as well, too. So Kaya and I were hanging out, and she saw a picture of Pedro Pascal. And I guess she thought he looked like Dan, and she just kept calling him Daddy. And I said, yeah,
no,
you're not wrong. The whole internet calls him Daddy. So it's just like the funniest thing to me.
I feel like you should have took Kaya aside and said, you're too young. Kaya needs to not be getting into those daddy issues right now. What does Dan think about this? Your husband, your betrothed?
I told him, and it was via text, and then he never responded to me, so I don't know how he feels about all of this.
Also, where was Kaya just seeing a picture of Pedro Pascal? You know, when I play with my girls, that doesn't randomly just pop up. Maybe Bluey does. Maybe Peppa Pig does. But I'm not getting out like glossy headshots of Hollywood A-list celebrities.
Oh my gosh.
Laminated ones.
I was organizing my Christmas cards from last year, and one of the Christmas cards I got has Pedro Pascal on it. So she was in my office. That's where it was. I was organizing them all, and she just saw and said, "Daddy." And I said, "Not wrong. I mean, really not wrong. Kai, everyone else exactly calls him that. So good job."
Mikey, do you organize your Christmas cards?
I don't get any Christmas cards. Didn't ever. No. I just send got my you first one.
One. F off. I send you one.
You've just opened the one I sent you, and it's halfway through February now.
That's my second Christmas card. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what I've been doing, actually. If that's
yes,
okay.
Please do.
I was been glued to social media. I took a break, and then I came back because there was going to be a GPW event.
Oh. Yeah, GP Dub.
And I got to say, it did not disappoint. I had a whole identity crisis, I think, because I thought one of the things I might never do in this lifetime is just step into a wrestling ring. Just step into one. Mm. Like, what a cool feeling that must be. Most people don't do that. That's like a lifelong dream, maybe. And I see a beautiful man in a maroon suit that I know, and he is... Captivating.
And just yes.
Owner, proprietor, creator of Feel Good Media, Limited.
Mm.
And your stable. This is wrestling talk. Your stable was making an appearance at the latest GPW event.
Yeah, so I was there at Grand Pro Wrestling's event of the first event of 2024. I can't even remember what it's called. Oh, Back with a Bang. And my team, Feel Good Media Limited, that I look after, manage, and I massage their shoulders and I get them their martinis when they need them. We're in a match, a no disqualification tag team match.
That's crazy.
You know, I'm an old man. I'm just turning up there to be on the outside. Mikey, do some star jumps, get the crowd riled up. I walk in instantly. Get told, "Are you all right doing quite a bit of stuff in this match?" I'm like, "Oh God," looking at my watch already. Should I go home now? And I said, "Well, yeah, I can do stuff. That's fine because I am fully trained, you know, Mikey."
Mm-hmm.
But when I say fully trained, you
made the school, I think.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, and I haven't fallen down in style for many a year. Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah, I can do stuff, but." You know, maybe within a bit of limitation, the young lady, Lana Austin, replies to me, "Yeah, that's okay. No bumps," which is, you know, a colloquialism for falling down on your back. None of them. Okay, good. But we're just going to hit you a lot with a kendo stick. Oh, thanks. Thanks very much. And she proceeded to show me the kendo stick and let me feel the weight of it and just said, "Yeah, it probably won't hurt a lot, will it?" I was like, "Yeah." Probably won't hurt a lot. And she's like, "You'll have your suit on as well, won't you? So that'll probably take a bit of the impact." Yeah, I suppose I will have my suit on as well. So that'll probably take a bit of the impact, I guess. I'm looking around at my team thinking, "What is going on here? Why am I having to take this flipping kendo shot?" But it was good. It was a good match. I was very proud to be involved. And you know what? It's a sign of respect when they come up to you as the old guy and still want you to do stuff in their match. So I was happy for that. It really. Mm-hmm. And when she was giving me not one kendo shot, but like six, Mikey, she gave me like the sixth one.
Mm.
And I leaned in and I whispered those magic words into her ear. I said, "One more."
Oh!
Oh my
and
God.
She looked at me with a twinkle in her eye, and she smiled, and we knew at that point we had a kendo stick connection.
Oh, my God.
And she leathered me with it.
Oh, I mean, I saw the photos; they were amazing. Mm-hmm. You were up in the air, you were against the ropes, and you were taking some. You were really taking some shots there.
Yeah,
you came out maybe. Too with a. What does that feel like? Just to backtrack, when you come out, you had a chair in your hand when you came out.
Oh yeah, because it was no DQ, Mikey.
No DQ, so you came down prepared.
No DQ.
You hyped that crowd.
We used all the weapons. We used, like I said, kendo stick, chair, the most fearsome of all, a baking tray. Yeah, we used a baking tray.
Yeah,
I might have to take a baking tray. Yeah, I might do that tonight. I might take a baking tray to the face tonight. See what that feels like.
It feels cathartic. Ooh.
When you're in the do you hear the, do you feel the crowd too? Like, and how, like, does it pump you up, or is it just, are you just zoned into what you have to do, or you actually get the feel good with the reaction? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
you've got
it's all about. That's what it's all about.
Well, if you don't listen to the crowd, you're not doing it. So
yeah.
I'm going to cut all this out because it's probably innately boring, but if you haven't, listen to the crowd, then you are not listening to how well the story is going. And then you don't know, you know, what to do next and that sort of thing. So you have to listen to the crowd. You have to be responsive. So that's why it's a beautiful storytelling medium, because it's a mixture of predetermined narrative and improvisation and athletic skill. You know, you've got to do, you might have to change things on the fly because it's not going so well. Of course, they're not digging what you're doing, you know? You've got to just come up with it. You've got to have a chat and figure it out.
Can you write a book? That was beautiful.
That's what is called working. That's what worker does, okay? That's not what wrestlers do. That's what workers do.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Seriously though, like I'm not bullshitting here. When I see that, it really is amazing to see just what that experience, and that I know somebody that does it. It must be so cool. I mean, that's a cool thing to do, to like see these pictures. They were awesome pictures too.
They were good pictures.
They were really good. Just to have that up, it must feel so good.
It feels good after you've done it. Before I do it, doesn't feel so good. Mm. I'm feeling like, why am I not sat down? Why am I not watching the TV? Why am I not in the bosom of loved ones?
Yeah,
where is my blanket?
Yeah. Exactly. Why have I got this athletic, aggressive woman in my face telling me she's going to hit me with a kendo stick? And then looking really happy about it, like it's a great idea. Wait, why is that a thing that happens to me?
Is Katie all right talking about her on the show like that? the wrestling. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
Oh my goodness.
Hold on a second. Before we go any further, can I just tell you two something? This arrived through my letterbox earlier this week. Can you see? I'm just showing it for the viewing audience. It's an envelope.
Whoa.
And on the envelope, it is addressed to the Movie Mixtape. And I don't know how it got here, but whoever sent it has just put the Movie Mixtape in red crayon on the front, posted it, and it's arrived at my doorstep. But look at this address, return address in the top right-hand corner. Can you see this? What does it say?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like an American return address, and which is very interesting. They splurged on the international shipping to give it to you.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that strange? What does it say, though, Mikey? Who sent us this letter?
Tape Deck Legal? Are we affiliated with them? Are we affiliated? I didn't think we were in Tape Deck. What is this?
No, I don't know if people have even heard of Tape Deck. I don't know if anybody that listens to our show even knows who Tape Deck is. Tape Deck is...
How would you describe them?
They're an evil corporation of podcasters. That's who Tape Deck are. Am I right, Marcy?
I prefer to plead the fifth right now, so I'm just gonna stay out of it.
Are we in trouble here?
Essentially, Tape Deck own 70mm Bat and Spider, Escape Hatch, Will Run For, Lost Light, and Twin Vipers. I think that's the current up-to-date list of podcasts. Is that correct? Some of them are more evil than others, but all of them are under the Tape Deck LLC banner for one reason or another. So we've been sent this letter, and I'm going to open it live. As it says on the back, you must open it and read it live on the air.
Okay.
So I'm opening it now.
We are obliging.
Oh my goodness.
Is this a summons?
Is it typed out?
Oh no.
Oh no.
This looks official. This is not good.
This is a very long letter. I wish it had been sent to someone else.
I'm glad it wasn't.
It's got an official logo on the front, Marcy. That should please you. Can you see that?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
To the hosts of the Movie Mixtape podcast, in recognition of the exceptional quality and constant performance that the Movie Mixtape has demonstrated, I've always loved Tape Deck as a... nice conglomerate of podcasts. And predicated on the decade-long association with the Paper Keg Radio Syndicate, that your co-hosts Mikey P and Dirk Feelgood have in good standing maintained, we are pleased to extend this invitation to the Movie Mixtape Podcast to join our esteemed podcasting network, Tape Deck LLC.
Wow.
By accepting this offer, the Movie Mixtape will become part of our leading, innovative, and diverse-ish community of podcasts under the Tape Deck LLC umbrella. This agreement restricts the Movie Mixtape from engaging with other networks or platforms a severability agreement approved by Tape Deck LLC upon its exclusive satisfaction that all dues and fees are owed to Tape Deck. This is how they get you.
Unbelievable. This is really
no obligation for support. This offer does not obligate Tape Deck LLC to provide any form of support, be it financial, promotional, or emotional, to the Movie Mixtape.
Oh my god.
Eligibility for the Tape Deck LLC Podcast of the Year, if accepted by February 29th, we're recording this a bit late, the Movie Mixtape will be eligible for consideration in our prestigious annual contest of Best Podcast of the Year for 2024. Oh my goodness, what do you think of that? Marcy thought we were getting Dune tickets.
I was hoping for Dune tickets, but this is pretty exciting.
That's pretty earth-shattering, really. I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what to say to that other than, wow, thank you very much. Are we joining Tape Deck LLC?
I'm worried it's been so long since we recorded that Relatinos has actually gotten our spot.
Do we get to sit next to Chuck and Dale is my question.
My goodness.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, listening to Bat and Spider, I feel they have a lot of, maybe we should consult with them first because they have a lot of reservations. Yeah. They have a lot of reservations about them. Yeah.
Listen, I think we need to really seriously think about this because this could set our listener figures up in the double figures.
You know what?
I heard people, there's 14 or 15 people that listen to Bat and Spider. So that could be us. That could be us.
Good point.
If we give ourselves 8 months, it could be us.
Okay.
Wow.
I mean, I'm honored. I mean, I will say that that's how they get you. It's like my first reaction is like, I'm honored. And then my second reaction is like, what's the catch?
Yes.
That's the pessimist in me. Do we make it? We finally made it.
This is it. We've made it.
Well, Dirk's always been a celebrity, but are we celebrities now?
I don't know what it feels like.
Wait, are we going on Chicken Shop dates?
I want to go on a Chicken Shop date.
This is how we do it, Marcy.
This is it.
This is how we get Florence Pugh on the show.
Oh my god, that was the goal all along. Do you remember that?
I said, when we
first started this, I said, my one big goal is to have Florence Pugh drink a beer with us and be our friend. Here we go.
Here we go.
Wow.
This is step one. Happening. Step one. She was waiting for that.
Right, well, listen, we're going to have to confab off air about this. I've not revealed how many noughts were on the signing check, so I'll just... We'll look at that afterwards when we've finished recording because I don't want to distract you. Right. Shall we get going?
Please.
I'm very excited to talk about this movie.
Mm-hmm. Hawk the Slayer from 1980, directed by Terry Marshall, score by Harry Robertson, who also co-wrote the movie, Marcy. Yeah?
Mm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We can talk about that. But I've got a synopsis. It's my pick. Shall I get going with it? Hi. Drogo here. You know, Drogo, son of Voltan. Just on my way to find Hawk, take his gold and kill him. But let me catch you up first. You've heard of Voltan, obviously. Dresses all in black, like Darth Vader. Hideously scarred, like Darth Vader. Wears a great big helmet like... No, it doesn't matter. Anywho, he works for a dark Sith wizard. He works for a dark wizard. This wizard wants this dude called Hawk dead because of some prophecy, I think. As luck would have it, my father, Voltan, hates Hawk too, all because they're brothers. But Hawk is the hot one and has something called the Mind Sword, a sword powered by an elven mind stone. that allows the wielder to instantly call the blade to their hand, like a Jedi with a lightsaber. So Dad wants the sword, the Dark Wizard wants Hawk dead. I just want to prove my worth and show Father that I am the Lord of the Dance, not he. We've concocted a scheme involving kidnapping a nun, a ransom to lure Hawk out, and I've just received a tip-off as to where Hawk is, so I'm on my way to give him what for. The only problem is Hawk has got himself a gang. Mm. There's a man with a hand chopped off, a giant who is slightly taller than an average man, a dwarf who is slightly shorter than an average man, an elf with pointy ears who talks like Spock off of Star Trek.
Oh my god!
And finally, a woman who possesses magical silly strings and ping pong balls. But nothing will stop Drogo from coming of age, my father. I will certainly not be killed, despite it being only 2/3 of the way through this movie. Definitely not. For I am Drogo, son of Dav, son of Voltan. Son of Voltan.
Wow. Great. That was good. That put me in the mood again.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Hawk the Slayer. I've an unironic love of Drogo, son of Voltan. He's absolutely one of the best people ever in the history of moviedom. He's just incredible.
You were giving some real Draco Malfoy vibes. And I'm wondering if maybe that was like an inspiration. Like Drogo, Draco.
Or is Draco inspired by Drogo, son of Voltan?
Very, whoa. My father will hear about this. Yeah. Feelings from
yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Another thing she stole. So, this is instant mix. This is instant mix. This is the idea behind these movies are ones that you switch on, you sit down, and you're like within seconds, minutes. Oh, yeah, I am gonna love this. And I wondered if when you sat down and you started watching it, you thought in your heads, I can see Dirk's enjoying this right from the get-go.
I think I had, like, the Owen Wilson, wow. Like, he's staring. This is a very you movie, and we'll get into it.
Well, so I'll elaborate a little bit more just about the instantness of this movie. So we open on some narration that I just have to write down and repeat for you, for everybody at home. This is a story of heroic deeds and the bitter struggle for the triumph of good over evil, and of a wondrous sword wielded by a mighty hero when the legions of darkness stalk the land. Ooh. So yeah, I'm sitting down with my seatbelt on, ready for this to kick off. I'm like, yes, yes, please, all of that. Legions of darkness, mighty hero, wondrous sword, I am here for it. Because the first time that I watched this is released in 1980. So it probably was about the mid-80s when I watched it. Like, eight, maybe nine, something, maybe a bit older, maybe a bit, well, around that sort of age. And it was one of those films that had developed a bit of a reputation on the playground. Have you seen Hawk the Slayer?
Oh.
A few of my friends had seen it before I'd seen it, and I was desperate. I was gagging to see this movie. And we probably rented it. I think we probably rented it from the video shop. And, you know, you go in the video shop back in the 80s and it's got that smell of, like, ozone. And all the VHS cassettes are just massive. Mm. And they've got none of this kind of later in Blockbuster where you just pick a faceless one from behind the rack or whatever. It's all got the artwork and stuff on there. And the artwork on the front of this movie poster McFilm is just wondrous for a kid who's under 10 in the middle of the 1980s. So, you know, I was desperate to see it. So it starts like this. So I'm like, yes, my friends are correct. This movie is going to be amazing. And then, like, the very next scene, we see a fucking pink pit and all this fog coming out of this, like, neon pink pit. And these golden gargoyles just sat right next to this bloody pink pit, and this old dude stood there, and then like Darth Vader with a sword walks in. Darth Vader with a sword walks in, and he is like, he's having the best time of his entire life in this movie. Give me the ancient power, old man. You know, he's just going, all bets are off. I'm in England making this film, and none of my family are here, and I'm just going to have the best time of my life. Jack Palance over in the UK being Voltan, the baddie in this film. And so he's after this ancient weapon. We've heard about this wondrous sword. We think it's probably connected. Even I'm thinking it's probably connected at 8. He's probably after this sword. Doesn't get it. Kills this guy who turns out to be his dad. Hawk comes in. This guy who looks like Bret the Hitman Hart, but dressed up like he's going to the Ren Fair. And it's also his dad. It's also his dad. And he's like, oh, no, Dad, you're dying. And his dad's like, well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, because I didn't give Voltan what he was after, but I'm going to give it you. And then he goes, get that massive sword off the wall. And he gets this massive sword off the wall, sticks it down. And on the hilt of the sword, there's a fist. There's a fist on the end of this sword. And the fingers open. It's a sword, but the fingers open. And the dead, dying dad gets a little thing out of his pocket. And they put like this gem in it, and it starts glowing, and it becomes magic. And he's got this magic sword straight away within the first 2 minutes, and it comes straight into his hand, and he's looking all dead tough when he says something like, Voltan, you will die by the sword. And then a bloody great big hawk comes out of nowhere straight into the bloody TV screen, and it goes, Hawk the Slayer, and all these synths kick in. And the flute. So if you want to talk about instant mix, Martindale, name me a more instantly pleasing film than this.
Can I just say, picturing you at a very young age watching this movie brings me so much delight.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad it's that story, and it's not like you saw this on like Tubi, and like when you were home alone and you were just like half drinking and you were just like doing that. I love that story. That was a great intro. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a film that's been weaved into my DNA since like the since like the mid
80s. I mean, we were just talking about like, you know, you're wrestling a little bit, but I can see the dots connecting. Love it. That's great.
You know what's great that I loved is like you mentioned the sword, like the production, the design, the art design of like all the costumes, like Jack Palance's helmet, because he gets scarred and then like the helmet, like it was really cool. I really, because you could feel it's low budget. I think last week you said it was like a Bat and Spider, right up Bat and Spider's alley. And it was like a B movie, but it hit all the cool fantasy elements, I think, especially in the way it looked.
Yeah, and there's a little trick behind that as well. So the guy Terry Marcel, who directs it, wrote and directed it, he was a firm fixture at Pinewood Studios over in England, and they just did him a deal. They just did him a deal and said, "Give us whatever this is each week, and you can just pick whatever you want out of the cupboard and just use it." So like he got like all the props and all the costumes and everything like that at a real discounted rate, so that's why it looks pretty good, really. In terms of, certainly in terms of costumes, and things of that nature.
I think the scenery is really nice too, like even like the painting backdrops of like castles and things like that. But I liked all the detail, like they're just walking in the woods and there's skulls like nailed up on trees, and you can tell, like, even though it's low budget, a lot of thought was put into it, and it's very creative.
Yeah, definitely. They work to make you believe this isn't just the woods at the back of the movie studios, which it literally was, like a very small bit of the normal woods that people would walk their dogs through. I think one of the magical things about this film is, I think the 1980s is a really massive decade for sword and sorcery. And this is the first one. This is the first one.
Oh.
You know, after this, we get like Excalibur, We get Conan the Barbarian. we get Highlander, Willow. You know, we get all of these brilliant sword and sorcery films, Krull. But this is literally the first one. And it kind of, you know, whether it opened up, whether it made it a bit more kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Whether it eased the creation of these other movies or not, I'm not sure. But it certainly is the first one in this decade. And I think it has a little bit of a milestone. It's a little bit of a milestone, a movie milestone because of that. Do you like the Sword and Sorcery?
Yeah, I love it. And I definitely, if I was like you're like that age and I discovered this, I kind of like wish I did, because Sword and Sorcery is definitely something that I wanted to, that I was way into maybe when I was a kid. And like, I just felt like there was such a vacuum where I couldn't find enough Sword and Sorcery. I know like Dungeons and Dragons and books existed, yeah, but there really wasn't anything in terms of movies or TV shows accessible like this.
Yeah, there was that, I think there was that Dungeons and Dragons TV show. Do you remember the animation? I used to love that. I used to inhale that on a regular basis. And there was, we did a previous episode, Marcy, didn't we, on the animated Lord of the Rings, which came a couple of years before this.
I was going to bring that up, that I felt this really reminded me of that. And I can see your love for that in this movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. but yeah, I think sword and sorcery and science fiction are probably like my two favorite things. And if you can get me to watch any film, if it's one of those, I'll watch anything. But maybe it's a bit like, we have a little thing over here in the UK that the first ever Doctor Who that you see is normally your favorite ever Doctor Who. Maybe this is a bit like that here. Like, this is the first big fantasy film I saw. And maybe that's why it kind of got its hooks into me. But it really got its hooks into me. And I do think it's part of the culture over here. I don't know if it's that well known in America. Had you heard of it before?
Mm-mm, I did not.
The movie? No, I have never heard of it. That's why I was so shocked when you picked it. And I had to look it up and make sure it was real.
It is real.
Yes.
Mikey, quick question for you. So when it was being, when they were writing this film, Terry and his mate, they had a particular movie in mind that they wanted to do, like a medieval version of. Can you think what that movie was? Did you pick up any other vibes from this film? And I'm picking on you specifically.
Picking on me specifically. I mean, you mentioned all the Star Wars stuff in the beginning.
Is it Kurosawa related?
I'm going to go back to like Throne of Blood or something like that.
That's what I thought.
It's going to be like Throne of Blood or something like that.
It's Yojimbo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So what became of Yojimbo, like a fistful of dollars, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the gunslinger in medieval times, sort of right, riffing on Yojimbo, riffing on a fistful of dollars. So if you look at the sort of the structure of the movie, and if you think about some of the fights, even they kind of set up a little bit like, not sword battles, but just like standoffs and duels, people standing a distance from each other, focusing on their eyes and their little hand movements, and often the swords get thrown, rather than dueling.
That's one of my first notes, is Voltan throwing the knife into his dad.
Amazing.
So good.
They wanted to do like a kind of a historical film, and then apparently when they were writing, it was like, well, how does he get this massive sword off his back so quickly? Because I want him to be able to get it off his back so quickly. And he's like, I know, let's just make it magic. And they went, ooh, magic, and just went full blow with the magic. It was entirely a device for him to be able to get the sword off his back quickly.
Oh,
and then
funny.
They just went, you know what, let's put wizards in and elves and just have fun with it.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. So Marcy, what were your thoughts? What were your initial thoughts maybe?
So I just have to say that my very first note is this music ...
Yes.
And then a couple notes later it says again this music. You mentioned that the writer of this movie did the music, composed the music. And that is very close to my heart because I love John Carpenter so much, and that's what he's known for as well. So I think that's pretty cool. And John Carpenter, very low budget filmmaking, and loved making the music for his movies. And I loved the music in this. It wasn't what I was expecting, but man.
Describe it to us, Marcy.
Would you say disco-y? I don't know. Yeah. It was not medieval at all.
Medieval disco,
It was very disco, very synth. It's got like a good beat to it. I flipping love the music in this. Just every single time it hits. And in fact, I think most of the time Hawk walks onto the screen, you get a little bit of flute ornamentation or something as he enters the room.
I will say that main key theme, the beginning of it, just the couple first notes of it, reminded me of Gremlins a little bit. And Gremlins comes after this, so I could see, like, I can see that this inspired a lot of different things. But there's like that do 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 do, like that Gremlins, and you can hear that in the beginning of the theme of the music for this movie too. So,
yeah, I think the music is just synonymous, like as in. I'm trying to think of, like, it's perfect, Marcy, what you said, John Carpenter. Like, in terms of, I think if you love this film, you love the music, you love the score, you love the synth, you love the flutes, you love the fact that it's so ridiculously out of place, yet so perfect as well at the same time. And so maybe that's lightning in a bottle, or maybe it's genius. Maybe it's genius. Maybe I'm saying that's genius.
I have to say, I loved it the most whenever Hawk is horseback riding, but it's like slow motion horseback riding.
Yeah.
You know, that was very reminiscent to me of Beastmaster, when the guy in Beastmaster just gets his massive sword and just runs around in streams, swinging it around for about 5 or 10 minutes. Because I would do that if I had a massive sword too. I just run around in a stream swinging it. But there was a lot of Hawk, just like sexy Hawk on a horse in slow motion, arriving at places. Beautiful. What about you, Mikey? What were your thoughts?
I want it to be a love fest. I want to love it so hard, and I definitely would have fallen in love with it. And the only real thing that I said, why is this not as good as I want it to be? And there are two things, and one is, and I'm not trying to sour it, but I'm going to be honest, it's like, it's felt like, because we talked about wrestling before, and you said he looked like Bret Hart. So I'll use a wrestling analogy and say, this felt like a great card. We're watching WrestleMania, every single match is phenomenal. And the main event just falls flat. And to me, it was like whoever played Hawk just felt like, because Jack Palance is amazing. You could tell, like, he is a worker. He is like one of those actors that you give something and he turns it into gold, because he has some long scenes and he just grips you. And the opposite end, whoever played Hawk, I think, just was very one note and very flat. And that was the only draw. And unfortunately, he was the main star of this. And I was trying to think of somebody more charismatic in the scene. I'm like, this would have just been an instant hit for me for that reason.
So that's John Terry.
John Terry, okay.
Later went on to be Jack's dad in Lost. And he was always the first choice, apparently, for this, because he'd worked with Terry, I think, on some plays and stuff. But I get what you're saying. You know, compared to Voltan, there's nothing like Voltan. But that's the point, right? So you can't have two Voltans. You can't have Jack Palance coming along and
I don't mean to be
mugging for the crowd. And also, and then have Hawk do the same, because Hawk is supposed to be Clint Eastwood. So Hawk is the man with no name style character. He doesn't say a lot. He keeps himself to himself. He's a bit more stoical. That's the vibe they were going for.
Got it.
I agree that there's like a huge gap between those two performances, but it was intentional. It was
very understandable. And there's nothing really you can teach. And I'm not trying to, it didn't take detract me too much from the love. I just mean, even when you mentioned like Clint Eastwood, he's still, even though he doesn't say a lot in this movie, he's in every scene and there's something where you can't take your eyes off of him. And this guy, I kind of wanted that Clint Eastwood. When you say that, that makes it more appealing. But imagine Clint Eastwood in this role or something like that. And it just transforms it. But there was a lot to love. And like I said, I love the sword of sorcery. I love how they had every single type of character in like a D&D game. And this woman, this witch, I thought was so cool when she had the blindfold and she brings them all into the foray for whatever reason. When he starts building this team and the witch is like sending him to go get all his character, all the characters. I love that. Like that team building, that felt like a video game. Like when you play with like a Final Fantasy game and building your team and they each have a different, you know, asset class or something. I loved it.
It's like a heist movie whenever they get the team together. I love when those kind of montages. And I like the graphics. They were pretty. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they looked that bad for, especially being 1980. I thought they were really entertaining. I wanted to mention something really quick just because, you know, we all seem to like Voltan a lot. But I mean, I don't think you have to discredit Hawk at all. I just, you know what it kind of reminds me of is a conversation we had not that long ago about Inglourious Basterds, where Christoph Waltz just kind of steals that movie. So Voltan just kind of, like, the bad guy just kind of steals the movie. And I mean, good on him for just giving a really good performance is all I have to say about that.
I think as a follow on from that, one of the reasons this is such a successful film and one that lots of people will watch again and again is the success of the ensemble cast, I think. Like, I really like, you know, we'll talk about putting the gang together. So we get like vignettes of introductions to, we have Crow the elf, we have Baldwin the dwarf, and we have Gorant the giant. Is that how you say his name? I've written it. But we have little, we have perfect moments in the lives so that we know exactly who they are. And those are the things I totally remember. I remember the giant demanding his 2 pennies from the guy who sells the ale and thinking, God, 2 pennies isn't a lot for that work. You know, back when I was 8, I remember the elf with his fast bow hitting the other guy and the other, and him saying, I never even saw it, you know. That's with me for the rest of my life. And Baldwin the dwarf clearly being there as the comic relief with the priest trying to execute him on the raft and them just going, be still, ugly one, or whatever they say to him. So you understand all of these extra guys, the gang, straight from the beginning. You know who they are and what makes them different. But also, every time we're introduced, there's just someone in the background. So I love the innkeeper. I love Sped the hunchback. All of these little characters who are just acted so well. And I said Drogo, be still my Drogo heart, because he's just a thing of beauty. Just the way he acts in this film and always has to tell people he is the son of Voltan and talks about himself in the third person the entirety of the time. But yeah, the innkeeper, woman, like you said, which is obviously a ridiculously redundant name to call the witch woman. but she's great, Patricia Quinn. And so I just think every time you meet someone new, usually they're really good. They're a really good actor.
Yeah, it's fun.
Do you know the innkeeper? Sorry, Marcy. Do you know the innkeeper? Do you remember that character? No.
Well, I do remember him, but is he somebody super famous or famous? So
he's quite famous. But he's got a famous son. I'm trying to remember which way around. He's Roy Kinnear and his son's Rory Kinnear, who is the actor from Men. He's the man in Men. He's the guy who, you know, the Alex Garland movie?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But wait, so the guy that Jesse Buckley is like living with?
Mm-hmm. And he's the Prime Minister of the UK in the first ever Black Mirror episode.
Oh, the pig!
Who has the relations with the pig. And I've just started finally watching Our Flag means death, and he's in Our Flag Means Death.
Who is he in Our Flag Means Death?
He's the guy who gets well, spoilers for the first episode of Our Flag Means. He's the guy he knows from public school who has an accident with a sword through his eye.
Oh, okay. I have only seen the first season, and it's been a while, but okay. That's a good show.
But whenever I've watched it recently, and I've watched it like 5 times in the last 2 weeks, every time Sped the Hunchback starts and he's got beer swilling out of his mouth and he's eating whatever he's eating and it's all coming out everywhere, I am just cracking up. I'm cracking up at how grotesque this slaver is.
Between that and then the scene where they're all eating before the big fight, I noted, is this the most disgusting looking food and eating? Like, because does anyone know how to eat? It's like they just gave them like pieces of celery and they're like, that's all the budget could afford, but go ahead. That chicken looks awful though, too, that they're eating in the church or whatever later.
But it's medieval times.
Were they just looking for the gold? Like they were trying to get the gold from Voltan? They were like on a, or the Voltan.
No, Voltan stole the nun and wanted the gold for the nun. The gold and they needed to get the gold. Yeah.
And they needed to get
to pay off Voltan.
So I'll explain this really simple movie to you, Mikey. So
I'm pointing out the fact that it just seemed very, like they were building something bigger. Like there was going to be a bigger idea with like the brothers like the and the king. And then it was just became about like the gold and saving the nun.
The point of the I'm sorry to jump ahead of you, Dirk, but I think the point of the movie was that it's always the battle of good versus evil, and that this is just going to go on forever, and that this is just one piece of it. Yeah. That's what I got from this movie, and it looked. I don't want to talk about the ending just yet, but. The ending had a very, like, they're going to make another one, right? Like, feeling to it. And but we'll get to it, and I'll throw in my thoughts then. But I think this is just good versus evil. And, you know, we're, like I said, we're just seeing one piece of the big puzzle of it all. But this has been going on for, like, ever, right? I feel like they've been...
Yeah, I think to put it into sort of modern terms, it's not your Marvel Cinematic Universe where everything happens in space. It is your ground level stuff. It is like a Daredevil episode, maybe, or something. But the wizards, the Dark Wizards, right, Mikey? They want to kill Hawk because he's prophesied to end them all or something. Voltan don't like Hawk anyway, and he's working for the Dark Wizards. So they concoct this ruse to steal the nun with this phony ransom to lure Hawk out so that when Hawk comes to rescue her, they're just going to kill him. It's all a ruse just to get a battle between Voltan and Hawk to do it in. That's all it is. It's just manipulation to get to that point. That's what it is.
And I would love, and that's what I'm saying. I felt like there was such some deeper thing that I wish we got more of, and not the set it up for the second movie or something like that. That I guess never happened because there was some like really cool like epic poem type of stuff, like something deeper than. And it's a good intro movie, like you said, but it's sort of like I really wish they went for the fences on with all that extra stuff that they were building up.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, tell me what did you enjoy?
I talked about the team building. I definitely liked, it's hard to do an ensemble movie and to even though these are character stereotypes that we're all used to now, I'm thinking back in 1980, they did a good job of establishing the whole team and their different personalities and, which is difficult to do. It's a difficult thing to balance. And you're right. It is a fight of good versus evil. They were on the side of good. And it was a clear cut good versus evil, which always works. Jack was awesome. Voltan is a great bad guy. He gets hideously scarred. And I like the reveal of he loved the same woman as his brother also too. Who?
Eliane.
Did he steal? I mean, like maybe, you know what I mean? Like you could look at this movie a different way. Maybe Voltan's like, a good guy.
I am so sorry to make another Harry Potter reference, but it really reminded me of how Lily is always friends with Snape, but she doesn't love Snape the same way that Snape, but she's always loved James. So Lily gets with James and Snape feels scorned by that and hates James. So it's kind of like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter, Dirk's favorite. Yeah. He knows what I'm talking about. Can I just say one funny thing? I absolutely freaking loved the flashbacks to Hawk and his lady. Yeah. Literally every time it looks like they're about to like get it on, like Voltan just comes and cock blocks them.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too.
You will not be doing anything at this time right now because I'm here.
But we do get a tiny bit of exposition from Elianne in that she says something like, he's not the same, his mind has been turned. So we see that maybe, you know, something has happened there in the background, a bit like, you know, a bit like anger leads to hate, hate leads to, you know, all that stuff from Star Wars.
The dark side,
I think there's some little bits and bobs underlying it there. But as a kid watching this is where my love affair with elves began. Because how can you not watch this movie and think Crow the elf is absolutely the best? He's such a badass with his how fast his bow is. He looks cool in some kind of orange leather outfit. I think he looks like, you know, he looks and talks a bit like a Vulcan. He does. I mean, there's no getting away from that. But he was absolutely my favorite as a kid growing up, 100%.
I feel like he was also in real life, like the guy that like knew Elvis in real life, and like he was like the one, the OG dungeon master.
His character reminded me so much of Barry Pepper in Saving Private Ryan, who is the sniper, where just great shot, aim. Everybody seems to like this guy, but does not have much to say. But when he has something to say, you know,
that's pretty good.
It's good. It's a good analogy. Basically.
I like they go to these battles. So there's a few battles in it where they're taking on many more men than they've got in their table of five. But basically what happens is the elf kills 95% of them within 2 seconds. He's just like, he's like the ultimate equalizer.
he's just like,
bam, 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 bam. And they're all dead. And then maybe Hawk just turns up and bonks one of them on the nose with his mind sword. Okay. And I don't know what Bolden the dwarf does, but he just, he walks around a little bit and prattles around. But like the elf kills everyone.
He does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, wait. So I froze for a little bit. Did you guys hear what I compared the elf to or no? Did you miss it?
Yeah, the sniper.
Yeah, in Saving Private Ryan.
I can't remember the sniper.
Oh, he kills everybody just like that. He's the one killing everybody.
Yeah, so I agree with you, Marcy.
So this movie set up Harry Potter, and this movie also set up Saving Private Ryan. That's pretty wild.
This movie, Mikey, set up the rest of my life.
I know.
Up the rest of my life. But now, as a grown man, watching it, and knowing about all the toils and turmoil that we have to live through in our 20s and our 30s, I can't help but feel an affinity for Drogo, son of Voltan. Okay. Who only wants to be the Lord of the Dance and prove to his father, and who has probably the line in the movie when he goes to attack Hawk, and Hawk says, no, get out of here, mate. Go tell Voltan he can come and get his money if he wants or whatever. And he says, I am no messenger, but I will give you a message. A message of death.
Yeah.
And they just go at it. And then the music kicks in. Yes! Drogo!
If we're talking about line delivery, I think, and it is Drogo related, but spoilers, after Drogo dies.
No, sad day.
I love Voltan going, Drogo!
Oh, and one of the curiosities of this movie is it's impossible to work out the timeline of this film. It's impossible. You have no idea when anything has happened because Drogo looks the same age as Hawk, right? So when did that... Uh-huh. And we also know that that's not really Voltan's son. He's just nicked him from some other family. But when did he nick him? Did he just pinch him like two years ago? Or did he pinch him when he was a tiny kid? In which case, he's just grown up around Hawk the entire time. I just can't work it out. I just can't work out when his dad died, when Elianne died, how old Drogo is. But it don't matter. It don't matter.
It's like reading a comic book whenever like somebody new creates the story of the hero you like, and you're just picking up the newest issue, and you just have to go along with what the new story is.
That's good, Marcy.
This is like, you don't need to know everything. But
so many great things in this book. We mentioned Woman. She is the lady who Hawk saves fairly near the beginning. The first half of this movie is just the band getting together. And he meets Woman almost immediately, and she's being burnt for being accused of being a witch. And he saves her. Turns out she is a witch.
Yeah, I love that.
But you know, she's a good witch. She was only trying to help that pig. She didn't mean to kill it. And she decides she's going to help Hawk, and she can see the future and do various things. But she's like Batman, right? This witch. She's got so many different gadgets. I mentioned the rotating neon hula hoops that act as a teleportation machine. She has got a staff that, when she turns it upside down, shoots out silly string that seems to incapacitate people. She's got about 10,000 ping pong balls in a bag that she can just chuck into a room that seems to blind people, and then it just turns to snow. She is like the medieval Batman with all of her gadgets.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. And her face is cut. She has the cowl too. She only shows her mouth.
She looks cool as fuck, right?
Holy shit, with this movie's got a Batman too. Holy shit.
She looks so cool with the little blindfold and then the painted on eye right in the middle. Like
I had to put her on the show art. I loved it. I loved it so much. Yeah. So good. The designs.
Marcy, you said you had a penny drop moment where you recognized someone.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even talked about him yet. Well, we kind of did a little bit, but I can't remember his name. But the guy that loses his hand in the beginning and has to go find Hawk, his voice just stuck out to me. And I was like, why do I know him? And he's briefly in The Prestige. He owns a theater that Hugh Jackman ends up performing on. And it's like sorry, spoilers for The Prestige, but when Hugh Jackman tries to do the Dove bit and then Christian Bale, because, you know, they're always like in disguise, like screwing each other's stuff up. And Hugh Jackman's trying to be like, well, the next show. And he's like, show, you don't have a show. And that voice just always has stuck with me because it's just very distinct. I can't even think of the actor's name. But as soon as he started talking in this movie, I was like, why do I know him? And it was just really fun, which is another movie we've covered before, The Prestige. So, hey, look at us.
William Morgan Shepherd. I think he's a bit of a go-to actor, I think, in genre sort of stuff as well, because he's in Star Trek, plays Klingons in Star Trek. I'm pretty sure he's in Babylon 5. He's one of those actors who's just got a really great voice and can deliver your lines pretty well. As a kid, I didn't love him because he's like an old man with one hand. He just his special skills seems to be getting beaten up a lot. How many times does he get stabbed in this film?
And he doesn't die for a while in the beginning.
Or axes thrown at him, and somebody has to rescue him. But seeing his performance now as an older man, it's a good performance, good performance, and the way he's just got a gravitas to him, and I can imagine him in the Klingon makeup just being a great Klingon.
I really like all of the performance in this movie because, you know, you could just, I don't know, I feel like everybody took it seriously but had fun with it, if that makes sense. Yeah. And because it doesn't work if one person's just phoning it in. You know, you all have to buy into it, and I think they all did. And I don't know. Like I said, I think they had a little bit of fun, too, while making it.
Yeah. What's the deal? Was there, so did this do well when it came out? Or, like, is this, like, a well... like we didn't I me and Marcy never heard of it, so
yeah,
like,
so it had a good release in the UK, did all right, and then the distribution company for the US folded before distributed, so never, I don't think it ever had a theatrical release in US. Obviously, like you were saying, it's set up at the end for sequels, and I think that pretty much nixed the sequel at the time that it didn't go out to a wider audience in the United States, because we see, I mean, do we want to talk about it? We get to the end and It basically comes down to Voltan and Hawk. Of course it does. But what I really love about that showdown is when Hawk walks in. So all of this kind of takes place in like a nunnery or something, doesn't it? Like, and Hawk walks in and Voltan's there. And strung up behind him are three nuns. He's got three nuns on nooses right behind him. And you're like, ooh, this guy's not to be trifled with. And then he's got his mate Gort, the giant's tied up as well. Ranulf's dead. Bolden's already dead. Crow's incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like it is that showdown. And I really like this sword fight.
Yeah.
It's quite short, and it's entirely in slow motion. Entirely in slow motion because it's absolutely awesome.
But yeah.
I thought it was pretty exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Hawk wins. Runs him through, Voltan's down, but what we see at the end is the Dark Wizard carries off Voltan to be resurrected.
That was cool as hell.
I would love to see a resurrected Voltan, like dark makeup or something like that.
So there was going to be a second movie. There was going to be Hawk the Destroyer was the title for the second film. Never got anywhere near it because of that. And then in 2015, there was a Kickstarter for a sequel.
Whoa, get out.
So they got funding to make a sequel. They got £4 million to make a sequel. But they said we need £5 million. So they did a Kickstarter for like the remaining amount of money and they didn't get it. So that film was never made. That was called Hawk the Hunter, or I may have got those the wrong way around, but it's either Hawk the Hunter or Hawk the Destroyer. And there was going to be a video game because the video game company was part funding it and producing it. And then there were plans for a TV show spinning off from that as well. So, and at one point, one of our movie mixtape brethren was tapped to play Hawk in a sequel.
What?
Can you think who that might be?
What?
It is a British person.
What?
We've talked about them on the show before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Recently is your clue.
Recently.
I thought you meant a listener.
Eric
Oh my goodness, can you imagine? That would be the best. That would be legitimately the best.
He's French. I'm sorry, but you know. I'm sorry.
Paul Manso.
Was it for Sports Mix that we just talked about? Yeah. Heath Ledger.
No.
No, not Heath Ledger.
No.
Heath Ledger?
No. No, not to the.
No. Tom Hardy.
Oh.
Before he was famous.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Before Mad Max. Look at him.
Way before all of
that.
That
would have been good.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, look. Look at him rebooting franchises.
Apparently that is, yeah. But do not be too disappointed, for there is a sequel to this movie. And I hold it in my hands.
What?
Hawk the Slayer.
And who has written this comic, Mikey?
Oh my God, Garth Ennis. Whoa.
Written by Garth Ennis off of The Boys and Preacher. This is the official sequel to Hawk the Slayer.
What? When did this come out? Tell me about it.
This came out not long ago, 22, I think.
Oh my God.
Introduction by Simon Pegg. It is called Watch for Me in the Night. The sequel to the classic fantasy
that
movie.
Is so funny because I got such heavy comic vibes from this movie, and now it's like poetic, but it's ending like the sequel is a comic, you know?
Yeah, so it exists. So this is canon. So this is the official sequel the movie. So yeah, it does exist, and I guess you know it's one of those things whereby Garth Ennis was somebody said to Garth Ennis, well, what do you want to do? You know, what property do you want to do? And he's like, Hawk the fucking Slayer, mate.
Wow. No
Hawk the Slayer. And so that is the love that exists for Hawk the Slayer.
I'm buying it right now, live to tape. I am buying this right now. That's too bad about the movie. I bet like the guy that played Hawk was like, hey, I'll do it. Get £4 million and I'll make this movie. And they're like, hey, we got it. He was like, oh, I said $5 million. And then he's like,
yeah. No, I don't think John Terry was coming back.
Palance died like in the early 2000s too, right? Mm. Am I crazy?
I think
he died. Yeah. Jack Palance died like early 2000s too.
I think Jack Palance got like a sixth of the budget of this film.
oh man.
But he was worth it. He was absolutely worth it. Every single penny. A bit like they always wanted John Terry, they always wanted Jack Palance as well. I think Shane? Is that a movie that he's in? Is it Shane?
Yep. Yeah, it's Shane. Yeah.
That's what they saw him in and were like, that's the guy. That is the guy to be Voltan.
Do you want to know my big Jack Palance thing growing up? So Jack Palance also had a big part of my childhood. There is this animated movie. I don't even know how many people know about it. I don't even know if it ever went to theaters, but it's called The Swan Princess. Mm-hmm. And Jack Palance plays the villain in that. But I think Jack Palance was like known for doing like one-handed push-ups, and his cartoon character in the movie does a one-handed push.
What?
So nice. That's how I also grew up with Jack Palance, because Swan Princess was a big deal when I was growing up. I have not seen that in a very long time.
Beautiful. God bless you, Jack Palance. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah, he's in Batman also. Yeah.
But anybody got anything else you want to say about Hawk the Slayer?
I just have to note that one nun really sucks. The one that's just like, let's just get it over with. And they're like, no, you fool. You don't understand who we're dealing with.
Oh my God.
But I also really loved the set of whenever, I know it's Hawk and I can't think of who he's walking with on horseback, but they go through like the green spider web skeleton trees.
Forest of Weird.
I loved that because it made me think of Lord of the Rings in Return of the King, where they go and they get the dead army. Yeah.
It was only on like my fourth viewing this time that I suddenly went, oh God, that's why it's bloody green. Because they turn the elven mind stone on when they're going through the forest. And that's so it's pitch black and the green is the light from the stone. I thought it was a green forest. And it was only it's from the bloody elephant stone.
Cool.
With the little boblins in the woods.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I don't know. I really like the ending. I think it's okay. Like it is kind of sad we didn't get a sequel, but like I said, I feel like you can look at this as one big piece and that it's just gonna go, like they're just gonna fight and go on forever, these two, you know?
Yeah. Gore and Hulk. Yeah.
This was a perfect movie mixtape movie because we got to know Mr. Feelgood better, and this is a movie that neither of us had even heard of before this. So this was a perfect picture. Yeah. Great job! Well, it was a fun time.
Almost hour and a half. Like I thought really long and hard about it. You know, that was it. That's what I wanted to give. Well, thank you for watching that, and I hope people at home, if you've not watched Hawk the Slayer, you are now compelled to do so. You can find it very easily if you search on things like YouTube. Just saying.
It also just flies by. Like, you start it and it's like, it kicks off and that's it. Like, I want to say thank you because, yeah, like, Mikey and I are new to this, but it's just so much fun to see how much you love this movie. And again, I do love picturing little you watching this, but also adult you watching this, because I'm sure you had, like, the same reactions and the same, like, smile on your face. And it's just, it's like, I don't know, that's what I love talking about movies and learning about not just the movie, but, like, your experience with it. So thank you.
I think a fun game to play, because I watched this on Tubi and they recommended some awesome movies after this. And I was like, what was this? Like, Wizards of the Lost Kingdom. What is this? I think I want to do that.
Awesome.
Maybe we just like, that's the next movie. We just have to watch whatever Tubi recommends as the next movie.
Oh my God. Tubi mix.
Yeah. We pick a movie, so we start with something, and then we just go wherever it takes us.
Yeah.
I'm into that idea. The only problem is Tubi does not exist in my country. Oh, so I'll just have to watch the films.
Boo.
Boo. Oof. Boo, YouTube.
We've been saved.
But now on the movie mixtape, we use all of our magical ping pong balls to turn into a musical mixtape. And we pick songs that we thought of when we were watching this film. And if you click on the show notes, we will add them to the Spotify playlist that is contained therein. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful long list of many varied and beautiful songs that we have chosen over the episode. Mikey, do you want to go first with your pick? What song did you pick to go with Hawk the Slayer?
I will kick it off because you guys said you were struggling with the songs to go to this. Because sometimes when a movie has an awesome soundtrack, what can you do to add to it? And I said to you, Sword and Sorcery lends itself to heavy metal influences a lot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's one song, I don't know if it goes kind of perfectly if you listen to the lyrics. They even talks about a green light on a field. And then he talks about, it's a story about good versus evil and riders in the night and
a
team of people. And this is, I'm going to go with Dragon Force, Valley of the Damned.
I love it. Never heard of that song in my entire life, but it just sounds absolutely up my Sword and Sorcery Street right now.
Oh my goodness.
I'm excited to hear that, Mikey. Thank you very much. Is that a famous song?
I don't think so at all, but I think it's more like a speed song.
Good. That means you won't win. It's just letting me know that I'm romping home the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks in a row for this guy winning. Marcy, what's your song choice?
So I really focused on Voltan and Hawk's relationship and kind of how like they're just set to antagonize each other forever, I guess, for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with a duet because this movie is very much a duet of the two of them. So I thought it'd be good to pick a duet song. And I picked Dearly Departed by Shaky Graves featuring Esme Patterson, and just some of the lyrics that made me think of this. I believe the song once again is talking about a relationship, but it really made me think of these two brothers where the chorus goes, you know, you and I both know that the house is haunted. You and I both know that the ghost is me. You used to catch me in your bed sheets just to rattle in your chains. Well, back then, baby, it didn't seem so strange. So just how like they're each other's like own personal poltergeist, maybe, like they're to haunt each other for the rest of forever.
Good, you and I both know the house is haunted. Yeah, you and I both know the ghost is me. You used to catch me in your bed sheets just rattling in your chains. Well, back then, baby, it didn't seem so strange.
It's a fun song and it's a fun movie, so I just felt like it all worked. So beautiful. There you go.
Don't even know that song. We are flipping nailing it. So for my pick, I mean, I did struggle with this because I think that mainly because the score is so perfect, and I struggled to find something that encapsulated the vibe of the film, which is a mixture of fun, but also, you know, the eternal battle of good against evil. So in the end, what I've gone for is I wanted to bring in my memory of flutes into the mixtape. And I have a strong memory of flutes. In particular, my first year, university, I'm going to sort of record fairs, CD fairs, that sort of thing, buying stuff that I haven't perhaps heard of before. And I picked up a CD by a band called Bentley Rhythm Ace. I don't know if you've heard of them, Bentley Rhythm Ace. They were fairly popular at the time, like a kind of a dancey type group. And they have a song called Let There Be Flutes. And it's a wonderful instrumental dance track with a lot of fluting in it. And that is my strong core memory of flutes, so that's why I've included this our playlist.
I thought you were going to say Jethro Tull.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few flute-based songs, right? Yeah, if you really try really hard. But this is the one that I know well. This is the one I know well.
I'm looking forward to that, too.
That is our song choices for this episode. If you want to click the show notes, like I said, you can listen to our Spotify playlist. But if you want to follow us on the Instagram, which is the _movie mixtape, that's our name on there, you'll be able to vote at the weekend, hopefully, about which of those song choices was your favourite. But also over on the IG, you will get to see the incredible, the breathtaking, the mesmeric episode art that Mikey P does every single episode. And we have had an exclusive look at that art, have we not, Marcy?
Oh, I don't know, Mikey, if you saw my comment, but something in it pops. It's very nice. So lovely, Mikey, as always.
Thanks. Yeah, it only took you 5 times to get something that's at least legible to convey the emotions I wanted to convey about this movie.
Well, you went for legible and you shot past it and you hit stratospheric. It is incredible. So you go over and click on our IG, the _movie mixtape, and you can see that. Well, you've seen it because you've been listening to this podcast and it's on the thing. But you can see it even better on there. All right. But if you also want to get in touch with us, then you can write to us or send us a voicemail. Our email address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. I think we've got a voicemail, Mikey. Have we not?
We do, from across the land.
Hawk the Slayer. What a movie. I almost couldn't believe it when I heard you guys were covering this. Dirk, thank you so much. What a pick. What a pick, Dirk. All your picks are always so good. This That's movie, right. Hawk the Slayer, I randomly saw when I went to like a 24-hour mystery movie marathon. I think it was like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and then this movie started playing.
Oh, wow.
And I was just a changed man. Yes. I was forever changed after watching this movie. Uh-huh. It is so much fun. It is so goofy. It just ticks all the boxes with all the, like, crazy fantasy tropes that I really love. And the music, guys. The music. Yeah, this is such a fun movie to watch with friends. It's something that I aspire, like, all my Dungeons & Dragons campaigns to be like after watching. Just what an amazing pick. Amazing movie. Thanks for covering it, guys. Mikey, I cannot wait to see your art. Mm-hmm. I just cannot wait. This is one of my favorite movies. And what better podcast to cover it than the Movie Mixtape? Love you guys. Love what you're doing. I'll catch you later.
Wow.
Wow.
That was... like, no more voicemails. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. That was perfect.
That was amazing.
That is a voicemail from Jaisha, who you may know if you listen to the Podzilla podcast. And you probably do listen to the Podzilla podcast, because who doesn't? You will have undoubtedly seen all the Godzilla movies and wanted to listen to two brothers, Jaisha and Micah, talk about them. And that's what they do on that podcast, Podzilla. Not only is it a great podcast, but he's only gone and bloody produced a voicemail with the soundtrack playing underneath it. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. No pressure there. No yeah, pressure there really. Now. We have to produce this entire episode.
That's going to be the cleanest audio in the whole episode.
Yeah. I love, we were talking about how I discovered this as a kid. Yeah. He discovered this as a grown adult in a movie marathon at 2 a.m. Probably
That's
high
amazing.
On sugar. He's probably had so many slushy drinks and ice creams. He was like, Voltron!
Yeah. No, I definitely wish I knew about this.
Gave him the second wind he needed, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I wish I knew about this movie in college or when I'm sitting around and
oh,
throwing
my
something
God.
On. I wish
Could
I knew
you
about
imagine,
this.
Yeah. Like, putting this on at a party yep. or something? Holy
Would've
heck.
Perfect.
And what he said about Dungeons & Dragons campaign, yeah. there was definitely a lot of, like, Dungeons & Dragons around the time where they'd have, like, the elf would be called Crow, or, you know, Hawk would be in there and stuff. Absolutely, 100%. It's definitely a timestamp for fantasy fans of the 80s. I just love that, you know, he's like, Chase is like, what, 19 years old or something? And how old is he?
Oh, my God. Come
Isn't
on.
He? How
Come
old
on
is he?
Now.
Marcy
He's
knows,
my
she's
age.
Not telling me. He's your age.
He's my age.
Okay, fine. So he's 23. There you go. So that is further proof that we know how to share voicemails. So do not be afraid, because we know how to use technology. Mikey knows how to use the technology, and you can push a button and your voicemail can be heard. Thank you, Jasia. And if anybody else wants to write to us, it is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Or like I've been saying, you can just hit us up in on the IG and have a private conversation, or in any discords that we're in that we share. We're always happy to have a chat, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. I wish his voicemail was longer, because he was about the beat was about to drop.
I know.
I was so happy to hear the music behind that. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, that was awesome. Just, thank you so much. I might have to send him the show art or something. I might have to do something.
What?
Oh.
Yeah.
You're not sending him my show art.
Oh, either way, it's going overseas, so.
Dirk is getting the Xerox copy.
He deserves it. He deserves it. But that's it. We must bid adieu to Hawk. His battle is over. Bolden has returned to the Iron Hills. And now we roll on to our next movie in the instant mix. I believe, Marcy, you're going next. Is that right?
Yeah, so I have to say thank you to Mikey again. Mikey was kind enough to let me have Warrior in the sports mix. I had a crazy idea for what I wanted to cover for instant mix. And there's a certain timeline that this falls perfectly into. And I asked Mikey if I could go before him, because I would really like to get this pick in before the Oscars happen, because I have a very good feeling about this movie. And I am picking 2023's, as Dirk likes to say, Oppenheimer.
Wow. When you said a crazy idea, I thought you were going to go with like a full season of a show or something, like The Bear. We were going to watch all three seasons. But I mean, it's just as long as all three seasons of The Bear.
I just have a really, you know, we lucked out last year. We did Everything Everywhere All at Once. It won Best Picture. I just have a really good feeling about Oppenheimer and the Oscars. So we'll see what happens.
I did not think you were picking that. I did not think that you were picking that.
Huge.
Really?
I'm excited. I mean, yeah, no, I didn't. I did not think that you were going to pick that. I had a thought in my head, but I can't remember what it was now. But I'm excited. Our friend Florence, we'll get to talk about her.
A lot of her.
Oh, bloody hell. And Killian. That's great.
Killian. Oh, I can't wait. There are so many people in this movie. I'm just excited. Okay. So Dirk had rules for Hawk. Okay. One, same rule. Nobody look up anything. Okay. I just want you to experience the movie. Two, there's a main cast, obviously, to this movie, but there are so many people that you have not seen in a long time that you're like, oh my God, or just like somebody you really enjoy that just has a little minor part. I would like you each to pick your favorite. So I would say the main five are Killian, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., Florence Pugh, I'm missing somebody.
Matt Damon.
Okay, so those are your big five. You can pick anybody else other than those five, okay? And I just want to see who sticks out to you the most that isn't in the main five of the cast.
I'll do it. I'll do it for you, Marcy. I'll do it for you, and I'll do it for Oppenheimer.
I'm so excited.
And I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for Ludwig Göransson.
You think we talked about music this episode? I can't wait to talk about the score for Oppenheimer. I'm so excited.
All right, it might be good. It might be Oscar nominated score or whatever, but has it got flutes in
it? It's not as good as
Hawk. And could you is it a disco flute track where somebody
No, it's not. Where somebody could you imagine if it was?
I mean, it worked. We've just seen it work. Maybe if Christopher Nolan had pulled his finger out, it could have worked for this. But anyway, I'm excited. I hope that it lends itself to a staggered watch over 3 days, Marcy. But otherwise, God bless you. And we'll see you next time on the Movie Mixtape. Bye
for now.
Suck on that, you suckers. The Movie Mixtape is presented by Dirk, Marcy and Mikey P. All episodes are edited by Marcy and Dirk. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us over on Instagram at @the_movie_mixtape.
Yeah, planning, I have a big head now.
Exactly. I don't want you to
I mean, you already did before that, Mr. Hammers.